Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, North Bay Action Jacks. I'm Tamar Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 15. As a futures up 110, so we have a little bit of a flipperoo there. Do we have Professor Carl?
You do.
All right, bud.
Well, back from having done a little traversing of the country in search of when America actually built things. And, there's a few interesting notes from this. From this trip, anybody who wants to see a nice 4K demonstration of it can go over to the blog, and it's there. It's very close to the top of the page at this point, so I mean you don't have to scroll very far down to find it. It's the big boy stuff. Nice 4K. Turn the sound way up. Just saying. But you know, there was. Some interesting things that came out of that trip, which is not just seeing both the power and the demonstration of the logistics that had to be brought to bear in order for Union Pacific to be able to do that. I mean, that train, by the way, is a huge rolling advertisement for the company. Duh. And the irony of it was that the next day I drove into East Palestine, which of course is where a different lines train, but not so much anymore because now there's big merger, right? Those guys ran right through a yellow warning on a hot box, which for those who don't know is when the bearing in one of your freight cars catches on fire. And right in the middle of the town, the train derailed, and there was a huge mess because it was carrying a bunch of toxic stuff. Remember that one, Chief?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and
that's what the Caboose guy used to do, is watch for the hot boxes. We don't need them anymore.
Well, that's right. So we don't need the guy in the caboose. And oh, by the way, when we go buy something we've got trackside detectors, basically an infrared camera, right, pointing at the wheels. But when we see those and they're in the yellow, they're not in the red. We don't have to actually stop and figure out what the F is going on and fix it, because that would mean pulling the train out into a siding and being out of service.
I don't think the length of these trains that there's sidings that long along most of these paths.
Well, but you could, assuming that the siding is double ended, you could detach the car or cars that has the problem and leave them there. Okay, so I mean there's ways to do this if you want to, right? But no. They kept going, and yeah. And it was later shown, because of course the immediate question is how do you get that kind of a situation that is not noticed, given that we're supposed to have all these safety features these days.
Well, it was noticed. They didn't pay attention to it.
They ignored it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I mean because the first assumption was, well, that's not supposed to be able to happen because, they don't deteriorate that fast, okay? But, they do deteriorate and can be in relatively
We're talking about the roller bearings on the truck.
Right. And obviously, if the truck comes apart, then the train comes off the track, right? So, and if they deteriorate enough...
And you're still pulling it because you don't know what happened way back in the train.
Right. So
you pull the next cars right off with it, so that's a real problem.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, that's essentially what happened, is that... But the thing about it is that when you look at what America did, what we built, and let's not mince words here. We know who built this stuff, okay? You have, and this goes to a lot of the other issues.
Where was that built? Was that built at the one in New York?
I think it was in, I think either there or in Pennsylvania. But those, the infrastructure required to support those trains.
We needed water every 100 miles or so.
You need water. You need coal.
Yeah.
And if you go out west, you will still find in some cases the dilapidated, no longer functional water towers that were there that had to be there because no water, no steam, no go. Right. Other problem is if you actually run out while in operation and you uncover the top plate of the firebox, you got big problems like kaboom.
It'd be no surprise to you, but my guys at Pullman back in the day were kind of all over this, and my buddy Marty Leno, who I think easily could have been the smartest man I ever met, said it actually near the end of the steam era. There were some people, one of the biggest issues here, this, you know, it's kind of history that's interesting. One of the biggest issues with the steam locomotive is you lost the steam.
Right.
And
trying to figure out how to condense it.
He said it, but near the end, there were people that had designed a locomotive that was able to recover the steam. But by the time that invention was there, diesels were already there.
It's theoretically possible. It's difficult because of space constraints and such. Okay. The other problem that
because you do it in a stationary boiler in the schools I was in that were cold.
Well, sure. Yeah. Well, sure. But you've got all the room in the world in a stationary plant. Okay, or at least theoretically you do.
What we're talking about is when you the boilers at the back of the locomotive. Okay. And they get the things so friggin' hot it's scary with the coal or oil, and that heat basically goes through these, I'll use the term cylinders, and the cylinders then heat the water jacket around them, correct? And then that creates steam, a really high pressure steam, that pushes the joints on the side of the car. So which was another massive invention of how those things, they were direct drive, which really was the bigger problem. And if you had a steam locomotive now, the steam would create electricity for electric motors. You would never have a direct drive again. Like that was amazingly complicated. Just look at the wheels and how they're all attached together and how heavy those different things are.
The valving and such is actually genius. The way it works. But the other problem that steam locomotives had and have is that you don't have an independent brake capability from the train's air-driven system. Okay, so you have brake shoes. Well, there's an issue with that, trying to use that on a 10-mile, 7% rate or something.
Well, there was no air. Actually, there was air through the train.
No, there was an air system, but the issue is that a modern diesel-electric locomotive, that big... That great big horizontal box on the top is actually just a big ass heating element with a big fan on it, and so when you need to slow down, you just run the electric motor as a generator and you dump it into that heating element.
And we also have dynamic braking.
Well, that's what it is.
That's
what I'm talking about. Right. But it's an independent. It's independent of the train's system.
If ever anybody had if everybody's old enough to have a little race cars you throw around the track.
Yeah.
If you had one with dynamic braking, you would win races.
Yeah.
Because you would slow down into a curve instead of just fly into the curve.
Right.
And if you look at a CTA car, if you happen to be from Chicago or ever been here.
Yeah.
Unlike the New York cars, which actually have compressed air braking. CTA car has really no brakes. It uses dynamic braking, which means the electric motor essentially goes into reverse,
right,
and brakes the car. And when you get down to like 2 or 3 miles an hour, if you listen real close, You pull into the station, you'll hear this clunk. Well, the clunk is a magnet that reaches down and essentially grabs the rail.
Right.
That's the last piece of braking. There are no brake shoes like you'd have on a car or on a regular train or anything like that.
Right.
Or a New York subway car has a compressor that's more like a real railroad car. That has compressor. It has compressed air. The doors are compressed air. And you have regular braking. They probably have dynamic braking, too, I would guess. But
the thing is that's the thing that diesel-electric engines have, locomotives have, and a steam engine does not. Now, interestingly enough, if you think about modern diesel engines and trucks, for example, that have Jake brakes, there isn't any particular reason that you couldn't make the valve gear more complex for the steam drive and use those cylinders as essentially a Jake brake. Okay, now I don't know how much braking you'd get out of that, but there isn't any particular reason that you couldn't do it. It just nobody ever came up with it.
Well, the big boy that Carl was talking about was converted from coal to oil.
Yes,
which gets you an awful lot of advantages. When they used to, if anybody,
well, oil has a higher energy density. That's the big one.
Well, it also there were all kinds of problems with coal, as you can imagine.
Well, yeah.
My mother used to say that when you had the windows open on the train, you're liable to get a cinder in your eye,
right?
Which you're not going to get from oil, but it also these cinders that pop out of the chute are hot. So if you ever actually did run a coal train, the Freedom Train had this problem. When was the Freedom Train? Was that 25 years ago or 50? I don't know when that was. 25 years ago, must have been. I remember seeing it downtown, but it was coal. But if you run through like a suburb with a Freedom Train, you better have the fire department out there with you because these things land on the side of the roadbed.
Right, and they can start firing.
Well, now they don't. They used to make sure the roadbed was way down because they didn't want fires. Well, now it's not. You don't mow the necessarily next to the tracks. It's a big problem.
Yeah.
The coal, every, I don't know how many hundred miles, Carl, which they don't have to do to this one, I don't think. I'm sure when they're done with this run, they do. Essentially, got to cool the whole thing off the front end. And you have to get big wire brushes, and you got to clean out those cylinders.
Yeah.
What a horrible job that is.
Well, okay, so when they got to Scranton, they had to do boiler maintenance on this run, okay, at Steamtown. And it was a week before they could get in there because that's how long it took to cool off.
And it takes 2 days to heat up.
So, I mean, the amount of metal involved in this thing.
When you look at it, you just look at it.
You just start it and say, let's go.
Yeah, I mean, when you see the enormity of it. I mean, what do you think the thing weighs?
I saw something on there. The point, Chief, is that we had a real issue here. That we needed to solve. Okay, these locomotives were designed and built during the back half of World War II. Okay, after, well, I guess not really the back half, it's 1942. So, yeah, after Pearl Harbor. Okay, we needed to be able to get material, steel tanks and things like that over the Wasatch Mountains, and we didn't have the ability to do it. So we built those locomotives to be able to.
Yeah, you can't. Well, you could, but. You really can't, like a diesel, you can put eight of them in a row and have one guy running them. These things you can't. If you put three or four of these together, which they did, by the way, they had helpers and then ones in the back pushing.
You need three or four crews.
Yeah.
Right. But the thing is that they needed to solve this problem for the war. But it's not just the locomotive. It's also all the trackside infrastructure they had to be.
Absolutely.
The roundhouses, the turntables, all of the other stuff to keep them running. And all that stuff is gone. And so that is one of the things. When you see this thing go by, if you watch a video, there's actually three tenders behind it, the original one and two more. The other two are just full of water. And that's just simply because even with all three of those tenders, you have to refill those water tenders about every 200 miles. And that's assuming that it's actually providing the drive and not the diesels that are behind it, which, of course it can, right? But the other thing is that those diesels have to be there for the dynamic braking, but also because that train's running on a main line, and if something goes wrong with it, you can't stop all of the freight traffic that comes through those lines. Okay, so they have to be able to get it somewhere where it can be fixed.
Well, you're also you're pulling it in and out of yards. You're using the diesels.
Well, yeah, but you know, but the thing is, yeah, it is an astounding thing. But Chief, interesting point. Okay. I chased this thing around major cities.
You could have just come to Chicago, watched it. It was here for a while.
Well,
afraid you have to buy me a drink or what?
Well, I chased it to Pittsburgh.
All right.
Okay. So, and the interesting thing about it is that I saw it on both sides of the town. Okay. And then into Ohio, where it crossed into Ohio. And you see all the little towns as you're driving around there that used to be part of the industrial base of America, and they're just, you know, they're destroyed, right, because of all the offshoring and the bullshit that we've done in this country over the last.
Well, a lot of it is just bigger stuff. I mean, a lot of it, that stuff was done here too.
Yeah,
but we offshored stuff here from Ohio to Mississippi. I mean, it's not.
I get that.
Yeah.
Okay. But the reality of it is that some of these little towns, you know, they had the things that survived there and are still there, you know, whether they be restaurants or pubs or whatever, they got more business in 2 days than they probably had in the last six months.
I think next time you take a tour, you have two quick stories. Next time you take a tour, you got to stop at the two places. We probably already have done the what's the big museum in Dayton? The airplane guys.
Wright-Patterson.
But if you're ever in northwestern Indiana, northeastern, you got to stop at Auburn.
Yeah.
Because it's a massive education. And I went to the Wright-Patterson Museum. I was there a whole day, and I didn't get out of the one building.
Oh, yeah. No, I know.
But the same thing happens in Auburn. Because for those that think, you know, Detroit is the epicenter of automobile, that's absolutely wrong. The epicenter of automobiles is Indiana. At one point, there were 30 car assemblers in the state of Indiana. You know, you'd buy the front end from one, you'd buy the engine from somebody else, and these were all coachmakers.
Right.
But the thing that astounds you, and that our friend Carl always talks about, you'll see, I mean, you know, if, say you're 50 years old, and you think back 10 years, and you go, all right, well, that's 10 years ago. Well, you'll see, like, the first car lumbering down the street, and in 10 or 12 years, all of a sudden, they're going 100 miles an hour, or 80. The amazing, you know, from 1912, when the first plane went up, you know, flew about 50 feet, to 1928, all of a sudden, planes are 10,000 feet. I mean, the advancement that human beings could do without even, you know, the stuff you have today, is incredible. If you do it, you watch the Wright-Patterson, the Wright brothers, everybody says, okay, well, they put the plane in the air. That's nowhere near the accomplishments that those guys did. And these guys are friggin' bike makers. The idea of having a wind tunnel where you could actually test all this stuff. And today, I think today, if...
Chief, let's put a little focus on this, okay? Because remember, the mantra is diversity is our strength.
Yep.
Right? Okay. That's the mantra. That's what everyone tries to tell you. That's what both sides of the aisle, every politician tries to tell you this. It's bullshit.
I don't believe that, but...
Well, I'm sorry.
Well, some of these areas, if people were Irish, some people were German, some people were Polish.
Now wait a minute. Yeah, yeah. And what's the commonality there? Yeah, there's plenty, right? Okay. Now, what do you got now? What do you have now?
I don't think you have. I don't.
You
people
have now. Wait. Now, hold on a minute. Corporate America wants subservient people that can be roped into essentially being indentured. Okay?
They want the serf and noble system.
Well, duh.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Okay.
And we let it happen.
Guess what? What percentage of the people that happen to fit into that paradigm are Einsteins? Or are even people...
Well, you never know until you give somebody a chance.
Okay, and it's 1 in 100,000 instead of 1 in 50.
I don't... I think
I don't care if you believe that or not. It's true.
And, well, wait, and what level are you talking about? If you got 500 welders, there's only probably one or two people that can see a solution to come up with another welding flux. But the rest of them are all pretty accomplished at something.
Well, I didn't say that there wasn't usefulness. I just said that importing those people when we have them here is crazy.
I don't disagree with that.
Right.
But my story on the Wright brothers, the thing that is the most amazing today is the propellers.
I know.
They were carved out of wood.
Yes.
And they're within like a couple thousandths of an inch of the maximum, what you could maximize by computer now.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did people do that?
Well,
and I couldn't do that. I mean, I think I have some brains, but I couldn't do that.
They use their brain in the same way that these guys built a locomotive that inside its boiler, when it's operating, has the stored energy approximating a small tactical nuclear weapon.
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, if it blew up, your town would be
gone.
They used to do,
by the way, early
on. They did
on.
Once in a while, yeah. But, okay, so, I mean, they're, you know, catastrophic failures are named that for a reason, right? Incidentally, before Joel pops up in here, if you think the pin hasn't hit the bubble...
That's what we're talking about when you come back.
Don't look at IBM this morning.
That's okay? What we're talking. And you're also going to explain to me why why every time the NASDAQ is up, you want to sell Microsoft and vice versa.
Well, I'll tell you what. The as we all know...
What is the story on IBM? It's down 20%. They didn't have earnings.
IBM apparently has some kind of funky thing going on here with regards to not meeting expectations. This is all.
But they didn't have earnings. This was a pre announcement.
Well, maybe.
Figure that out when.
It's a warning. Yeah, there's a warning.
It's a 20% hit. That's a lot.
They issued a warning. Apparently, they posted preliminary second quarter numbers of 293, which is below expectations. And oh, by the way, the problem here is, as I've pointed out, and I've been talking about for a while, this idea of exponentially increasing AI adoption revenue requires that your so-called token cost, which we were talking about this, the end of the week. Why don't we just denominate this in dollars? It's the same reason that they don't that you bet with chips in a casino.
Yep.
It's to keep you from doing the accounting in your head. And it's a psychological, it's all psychology. Well, guess what? That's now running into reality with, hey, wait a minute, we fired all of these people that actually had a brain in their head. We replaced them with computers. It didn't work out very well. Ford has learned this lesson the hard way and had to bring a bunch of people back, which I'm assuming...
But the executives still get their zillions of dollars. That's part of the problem.
Well, I'm willing to bet that those employees stuffed it in their former managers' butts in terms of the demand to return. Well, I sure would.
All right, lots to talk about when you come in, the interest rates are bugging me. Plus, I don't want to get into I can only read what I read. This Middle East thing is turning into a bleep show.
I said that was going to happen, Chief, didn't I?
Well, we all did. We've got a guy in charge who has no idea what he's doing. He reacts to, they're pissing me off, I better do more. That's not exactly a strategy.
Well, where did anybody, as I pointed out when this started, if Iran wanted to blow somebody up, if they wanted to screw someone with a nuclear device, they've had the ability to do it for 15 years by dropping a hot pile on Tel Aviv or Dimona, all right? And there's absolutely nothing that anyone could have done about it, and that would create a Fukushima-style mess. It wouldn't go boom, but it would arguably maybe be worse,
yeah.
Right? So that's been there. So this entire trope about, I got to stop him from having it, that was a lie. It was a lie propagated by the Zionist folks, headed by Bibi, who have a view of hegemony of the Middle East. They want to be the hegemon in that area. Okay, fine.
But they were able to talk with Pete Hegseth. They were able to talk Pete Hegseth and Steve Miller into it.
Well, they talked everybody into it.
Not everybody, I don't think.
Well, in America, okay.
Well, people still believe this guy for whatever reason.
I know they do.
I don't get it.
I think they're out of their effing minds. But you know what? Here we are.
What is
now?
Real quick, because Joel's going to pop up. Yeah. What is the psychology that when somebody lies to you 10 times a day, somehow you pick out the ones you like and they're the truth?
Well, you know, I don't.
People
know.
Either lie or they don't. I've never come across somebody who's a half a bullshitter. You are or you aren't.
Well, yeah, I've never quite figured this one out either. But it seems as though there's this this thing going on here. And by the way, it's across the board, because the people on the other side, all of the people on the left. Oh yeah, we have.
But there are
all these affordability things that we can do for the American people. You know what never happens, Chief? You know what no one ever says from either side of the aisle? The argument is always, you notice they always use the word affordability. No one ever says we're going to make prices go down.
Because they don't. That's what do you think we talk about all the time? That's our theme here, for God's sake. Yesterday,
I'm just saying.
I know, but yesterday we talked about Kevin gave that really nice thing last week about the Pell Grants. Okay, and then and talking about Indiana has jumped all over these Pell Grants for people that have essentially blue collar jobs, which is a spectacular idea. And you know, Ivy Tech does a whole bunch of stuff, and I hate to say something nice about Kevin because he argues with me all the time, but I will. His place is bound and determined to take people from. They got some people that are going to Purdue and IU and all that stuff, but by and large, they have people. They're trying to get people from the $20 an hour job to the $40 an hour job.
Yeah, okay.
And yesterday we spent a lot of time on the show with Mr. Flanagan and Nancy. Once you get somebody to 40 bucks an hour, that's 80 grand a year. That's not near enough, because right. The way these prices have gone up, and no matter what you get, you can get a 20% bonus the last 2 years. You're still behind. You know, you're sucking on the hind egg here. I mean,
the only way you solve any of these problems is to collapse price, and the only way to do that is to kill the monopolists.
Well, you have to pull the money supply out, which is going to. My problem with that is the monopolists might be the only ones that survive. That's a problem.
Well, you know what? No, because you throw them in prison like the law says you're supposed to do.
Hey, when you come back, let's talk a few minutes, because there's all kinds of other stuff here to talk about, the interest rates up and everything else.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this bleep show in Louisiana, this big server farm, what the hell they're doing down there. The thing is allegedly designed to use 10 times the power of the entire city of New Orleans.
Yeah. Where are they going to get it from?
And the governor, with his good old boy drawl, is somehow or another we got to do something with this political system. Ah, he's a socialist. No, I'm not. Somewhere along the line, you can't have people making these kinds of decisions that basically are getting stuffed in their ass pocket with money from these people. I'm not accusing the guy, but it seems. I mean, you can't have a guy saying they don't have to pay sales tax for 20 years.
Yeah.
What are we doing here? Even Caesar wouldn't do that, for God's sake. Well, here, everybody got to pay a tax but you.
Well, you know. By the way, that violates the 14th Amendment, which was incorporated against the state.
We don't care about no stinking amendments.
Well, you know what? Then get a rope.
You know I'm with you on this.
Then get a rope, because I'm tired of
this. Do you think anybody could have amassed the cast of characters like I have where you can't agree with anybody?
Well,
last week, how could I possibly agree with Hal without him coming back at you?
Well, you know, hey.
No, I agree. Let's paint the room blue. What do you mean you want it blue?
Well, like I said, I've got answers to these problems, and people just don't like.
I think every state. I mean, if I was Solomon here, every state should be able to compete with other states based on their numbers. If somebody wants to have a 5% in sales or income tax, and another place runs the place better and it has a 3%, it gets everybody essentially the same stuff. I'm all for it. The idea that somebody walks in and there's all the rest of us sitting here paying 5%. oh no, we want you guys, you can pay too. I don't see where that gets anybody anywhere in the long run. I just don't. I mean, it's not because I'm never the guy getting the two, which, well, maybe, geez, is part of it. But
that stuff has gone on for so long, though.
We've entered a new era. In Illinois, I forget which one of the plants it was. It was, I don't know, John Deere or somebody or other. The company's getting the sales tax or the income tax that the people in the plant pay to the state. That's way beyond anything anybody ever dreamed of 40 years ago.
I don't know about that, Chief. There was all kinds of hinky crap that went on in the Detroit area and in Michigan generally.
Yeah, look how that worked out.
Well, it didn't work out, okay? But point being, one of the things that, you know, that I did for people back in the days when you loaded computer programs on punch tape was figure out how not to pay boroughs to cut you another tape because the city changed the tax rate in the middle of the year. Okay, and they did it for that sort of a reason.
But when does somebody did it someplace else, when does that become justification?
I didn't say it was justification. I said it's as old as time, and yet we as citizens refuse to put the middle finger up and say, you're going to cut this crap out, or we're going to get a rope.
Well, I mean, it's one thing for this president, who I don't think has any idea what the hell he's talking about when it comes to this stuff, and I'm not so sure Biden did, and maybe Obama didn't either.
But you can't
come out and have your essential platform, and all you do is tell blue collar workers, which are dumb enough to believe you, that you're all for them, and yet there's nothing anywhere that really helps them out, and all of a sudden, you come in with one of your buddies from Saudi Arabia, put an investment in a place, and away you're going to give them every tax dodge on earth. How exactly am I supposed to compete with that? I mean, the whole idea, it has to be somewhat even for anybody to feel that they can, because we have ways here of going out and raising capital, blah, 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 getting a loan, go to banks, go to the bond market. We all of a sudden, we just go right around that and bring somebody else in with all kinds of,
okay,
here's
the problem that comes up with this and is going to continue to be a bigger issue. We may not get a Joel. And this was what I've been pointing out for a while, and by God, you agreed with me on Friday. It's scary, is that we've turned from a generally declining rate environment, which allows all kinds of financing games to be played whenever something doesn't pencil. So you want to give somebody some benefit, you want to bring in a bunch of migrants and hand them access immediately to Section 8 housing and Medicaid and everything else. These are people who are a net drain on the economy, okay? But the manufacturing company that's in that city loves it because that guy has subsidized housing, subsidized food, and therefore I can pay him $2 an hour less than the American, and he'll still do the job. Okay, and it is not because they love these guys and they work so hard. It is because you handed them a check, and essentially, this is the backdoor screwing of Americans, and why I say people need to start saying, get a rope, because it is not about compassion for the person from Yemen or Haiti or wherever the F they're coming from. It is about the fact that the subsidy that is being handed to these people means that the employers are able to pay those people less money. Therefore, their stock price goes up and the American loses their job. And the same thing is happening in size. We're talking hundreds of thousands in the tech space with the H1s.
That whole thing, the idea that you can, in this day and age, you can import indentured servants is kind of crazy.
Well, Chief, but the whole reason it's done, and people think that this is, you know, oh, you're racist if you bring this up. No, this has nothing to do with racism. What it has to do with is the fact that the government has created a structure to bring these people who do not share American values. They just don't. Maybe 5% of the world's population does. The rest, and there's no magic dirt. Coming here does not change this.
See, that's so... What you described as HB1, and I've never come across that, so I have no choice.
Well, I have, all the way back to when I started working.
I have no choice but to believe you, which I don't mind doing, by the way. But it is so different than the, you know, I for some reason, I don't, because I used to work in the schools in these areas, I'm pretty in touch with the Hispanic community here.
And well, we're not talking about Hispanics. These are mostly Indians.
I know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't think, I've never seen one of these people. They're willing to work hard. They don't necessarily charge that much less, but they're willing to work hard. And by the way, I've never seen any one of them not having to pay their own mortgage or their own rent or anything else. I mean, they're not getting annexed from anybody.
That's not, that's just not the issue.
I know. What you're talking about is a total, it's larceny on a much larger scale.
Oh, it's grand larceny.
I mean, the guy sitting in the Home Depot parking lot looking to clean up your backyard, nobody's handing him a check.
That's not yet, but that's, yeah. This is it. And oh, by the way, every single university, well, all right, not every, Kevin's may not be doing it, virtually every university is involved in this, with this offshoot of this thing called OPT.
All right, help me with this, as how it's played out, because we've talked about this for many years in very different, sometime in different spots. I thought it used to be, you know, Grant, I know I'm wrong here, so let me just be wrong for a minute before you correct me. It used to be all the, mostly we're all Chinese, especially Illinois. It was mostly all people from China, wherever the people from out of the country. They came here, they got a degree, they went back or didn't go back. I mean, most of them did go back, but then they would come back as on a work visa to work for somebody in Silicon Valley, say. But most of those people, I think, were originally educated here on a student visa, then they went back and came back. Now why somehow or another, and you know, whether anybody should be here in the first place or not, I'm not going to go into that, but somehow or another, person has, quote, this visa, and instead of just being able to stay here, you know, which maybe you wouldn't mind since they've had an education here, and become a citizen if they wanted to be, and go out and compete with everybody else, somehow they're going back, and they're coming back as an indentured service. Who the hell designed that?
Chief, the
man, I don't really mind some Chinese guy coming here from and going to the University of Illinois and saying, well, I like America, I'm a lot better than China, applying for citizenship. And I don't know what you have to do to get that. Then he goes out and like gets a job. I don't really have a problem with that. The idea that he goes back to China, comes back here for $75,000 when he could have been making $100,000, but he just would have got a job here himself. That whole thing is so screwy to me.
Now, wait a minute. Yes, you do mind, and here's why. He didn't do that. That's what you believe, but that's not what he did. And this is why I talk about the cultural.
Well, that's my point. It seemed like, how do you come back as an indentured servant when you're here as a student?
Because if you're on an H-1, your employment is tied to.
Let's say your student visa expires. You go back to China, then you come back on an H-1. That's so insanity to me. But now you're not competing. You're coming in as a slave.
Right. And oh, by the way they short-circuit this is using this program called OPT, which essentially is what the trope for this is. It's practical training in field while
bullshit.
You're a student. No, really? Oh, by the way, they've busted some of these so-called OPT things. You've got supposedly 1,000 of these college students that are working in a place that's, you know, a room about the size of my office. And there's not a single person. Just like the Learing Center that supposedly has 1,500 kids in there. All right? It's the same crap. And it's everywhere.
Isn't it amazing how people are so imaginative at stealing? If they just put that imagination into doing something right, imagine how well we do.
Well, but they're not, are they?
No.
You know, and here's... Chief, here's the basic problem with it when it comes to China.
I think, Carl, when you any subject we talk about, I'll never say to people, some people didn't always wanted to find another way to get the home base, right, instead of getting a hit. But it seems like the government gets more and more involved every year, which I think is exactly not the way to go here. It's a very I think whoever's really running the place, it is a very fascist system where the government controls pretty much everything. I don't like that. I mean, it's kind of the root of all. Of all we're doing, and
right, but here is the point that has to underlie this conversation. okay? It has to, because this is what's going on right now. When you have built structures that do this, and we have, okay, across decades, the government is involved in all of them, because the reality, and Hal's brought this up before, and so have I. And this is where, by the way, this is where Friedman was full of crap, okay?
Where?
Friedman's thesis was essentially that things like insider trading laws and monopoly laws were stupid because somebody would break ranks and take all the business.
No, all right. That's not what he said at all, by the way. But it's, well, for those people who like to berate somebody who's been dead for years, like to say that. What he said about insider trading laws is if you had an open market like we used to have.
Right. But if you
jabbed him with a needle and brought him back and saw this electronic fiasco we have now, he would never say that you don't need insider trading laws.
No, I understand that. But what I'm saying is that right. But here's the thing. How does that structure stay in place? See, and this here's where he went wrong with this. He was working from a premise, because he was alive when these laws were enforced, and they were actually there, that if you do this kind of thing, you go to prison, because you get 10 years, right? That's what 15 U.S.C. says.
Actually, it's been turned around, what he said. What he said about monopolies was, if not supported by the government, they are the hardest things in the world to maintain. But we support them by the government, and then
exactly, because
he never said they would just all break apart.
No, but
he was under no delusion that Commonwealth Edison was going to break apart because the government set them up.
No, I understand that, but absent government enforcement of some kind, someone breaks ranks.
Yeah, but there's always the government enforcement now.
Well, hello. Okay, so the problem though is that now. We've gone well beyond this. Now you have a government according to the H1 law. This is not a suggestion. It's actually in the law. You cannot bring in foreigners unless two conditions are met. One is that there cannot be an American that can do that job.
Well, that's not the case.
Well, you have to diligently advertise. Of course, they don't. They cheat, right? Okay. Secondly, you have to pay above prevailing wage for that position in America by Americans.
And they pay less.
Now, you must, for each of these applications, you must file a document in which you swear these facts are true. All right? Now, that's perjury, which is a felony at the federal level. And if you lie, all right, now, here's the basic problem.
All right, so you're expecting Trump's personal attorney, Todd Blanche, who's all he cares about is keeping Trump out of trouble and, by the way, chasing the people he hates. Do you think he would even want to listen to what we're talking about?
By the way, tell me if this is a Trump issue, tell me why Merrick Garland did not jail all these people. When Joe Biden was president, he was the attorney general.
I didn't say all this. I keep talking about there's people behind the scenes that tell you who to go after. They seem to change.
It's never Intel.
Yeah. How did yeah, it's never Intel. It's never Elon Musk. It's never these people. I mean, it's insane. But there is a level, and this came up. This came out of the. To the extent that there's a, I don't know if you were ever on a corporate board, I was, but spanking people that are high up the ladder is really hard to do. Just in a congenial letter in the room. I mean, I'm not going to say a name of anybody it ever happened to, but if for instance Goldman Sachs is running around breaking every law on the floor in terms of crossing orders and those kinds of things, and actually, you know, if you steal an eighth 100 times, well, that's $1,200. By the way, that's a
real
felony.
Money, right.
That's a felony in most states. The idea of bringing that up with the guy from Goldman Sachs sitting on the board is really testy. It's going to be really testy if somebody, you know, brought a sack of cash to Trump because he would actually take it. Other people, you know, got paid in other ways. But It's pretty. He's not going to turn around this morning, the next morning, and sig his Justice Department on Jeff Bezos. It's just not going to happen.
Well, okay, then, as I said, get a rope.
Okay, but there's nobody with the rope either. I mean, it's the point is
Well, guess what? You and I better start changing our opinion on that, because if not, there isn't going to be anything left of this country.
Well, we are on the same path. You and I are actually together on where we're heading. I don't know.
Yeah, right down
the toilet. I think there's a chance of that. I still hope that we can possibly. But right now, when you talk about law enforcement, I mean, I don't want to get into it. But evidently, this guy that the ICE people killed yesterday was the wrong guy. Wasn't the guy that they even had the warrant in. I mean, what are we doing?
Did he resist arrest?
Doesn't matter. It's not a capital crime.
Okay. Guess what? I'm coming home the other day. I'm coming down the freeway.
I understand how things.
You know where I'm going with this.
I know how things can escalate.
Have to do to make me stop.
I know how things can escalate, but I also know that
right.
An awful lot of, and my dad was a cop. He's a big Irish guy. He had a partner. Those two guys with a billy club could pretty much handle anything, I would think.
And then you put people whose only thing they've got that they can do because they're not capable of it physically is to pull a gun.
Well, and it's a problem. But it is. But now we're whatever. I'm just saying we seem to have real problems as to who we go after.
Well, yeah.
I mean, and it's a selective enforcement. The more laws we get, and now on top of it, we got 500 executive orders from the last three people. Nobody even knows. There's people that think those are laws.
I know.
And I mean, even
though it says directly on the face that they're not.
It's kind of crazy. But all right, we had Hal can pile in whatever he wants in a bit. What's going on? What's going on with the market? I mean, we've got.
Okay.
Since I have a lot of these stocks for people,
right?
And actually, we have a lot of Microsoft. We have some IBM. The flip back and forth were. Yesterday, we're chasing Microsoft to the upside with the market down 400. And when I say the market, the NASDAQ future. Today, it's up 173. Microsoft's down $12. Meta and Microsoft seem to be a fade of the rest of this stuff. Yesterday, Micron was down $50. Today, it's up 33. It's almost like if somebody started buying Micron, you want to sell Microsoft. What's going on here? I mean,
this is okay. You ever. Well,
but the groups seem to be together. Palantir, Microsoft, Meta are in one group. Micron and the other guys are in another group, and one's up, the other's down.
Right, but here's the thing: you've probably never actually, and I never have either. But you see it on TV, seen somebody that's going into cardiac arrest, right, or having a seizure. Right, and I actually have seen that because I had a friend of mine that was epileptic.
Yeah, a couple of
So I have seen that. What you're seeing here is the
actually our old dog had epilepsy.
Well, you're seeing the epileptic behavior of a market that is four times overvalued based upon actual cash on cash return. Okay, now.
I think in some areas more, but some less.
Well, no, I'm saying across the market, okay? Yes, there's some examples that are even worse than that, right?
And some companies are actually making dough and spitting out dividends, and they're fairly,
Whoa, stop.
But nobody wants those companies.
In most cases, and I'm talking cash on cash here, okay? Good luck finding those firms. I am not speaking of the company that so far has successfully negotiated the financing side of things, okay?
Yep.
The problem is that cash on cash in a generally rising rate environment, and that is ability to service all existing paper and pay the principal, not roll it when it matures, is the only way you survive in a generally rising rate environment. And however long it takes for that to sink into people's heads is how long this crap is going to go on. And when it hits recognition, Chief, you're going to have every one of these firms in the market today that is going to trade at that number. And for many of them, the answer is zero because they can't.
Well, there's some, one of these days, maybe we could take 5 minutes today. You know, I haven't done it in a while, but I, this whole area of long-term versus short-term debt financing and whether or not it's tax deductible versus dividends and earned, I think is really one of the biggest problems that we have in terms of
but you're not going to change that tomorrow.
No, I'm not going to change it ever.
probably not.
What you're saying, my point is, if somebody has a, let's put it this way, if you and I on a hot dog stand, we're making $1 million a year, okay, and yep. it's all equity. Now, and we're going to go buy another hot dog stand, and we think that we're going to do the same amount. We could come up with another $1 million and make 10%, or we could come up with $500,000, borrow some money at 5%, and our return to the $500,000 is going to be better. It's called leverage, but if it's done in a proper way, by the way, that's deductible. That interest is deductible. If it's done in a proper way, it makes some sense. Now, if we did it that way, and we got a loan at 6%. Next year, all hell breaks loose, and the interest rate goes to 7.5. We're still, if we did it for the right amount, and we were comfortably above that number in our return, it's not something we're going to cheer about or have a beer about. But we're okay. What you're talking about is somebody who's only is only doing well because the rate is so low. Well, yes, they have a problem.
Well,
but
no,
we, if we did this intelligently, we wouldn't be happy about it, but we would not have a problem, correct?
Well, yes and no. The problem is this. In the corporate world, in the modern corporate world, okay, no one ever actually retires.
I got that.
Their debt, ever. Okay, and Ed, this is all the way back to when I started writing the blog, and in fact, back into the 1990s. You take a look at the Fed Z1, you will see that the amount of corporate debt outstanding is from the lower left to the upper right. Right? It never goes the other way. All right. In a generally declining rate environment, this works. When that turns, it now is a millstone around
okay,
your neck.
But piece together my I constantly talk about Mar-a-Lago because everybody knows about it.
Yep.
Piece together. Now, if we get a 5-year loan at 5% when you and I get the other hot dog stand.
Right.
And in the meantime, some succession of buffoonish presidents and Federal Reserve chairmen plunk a 20% inflation rate on top of the world. And now our $1 million we were making, we're now making $1.2 million because our prices of hot dogs has gone up for 5 years. Even if our new rate is going to be 5 to 7 or 8, I'll take that deal any day, Carl. I'll take that deal any day.
And the problem, well, you will initially.
I'm already up. The inflation is a big helper to me because unless the rate goes up the day the inflation starts going up, if it's a fixed rate, I make out like a bandit.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do.
No, not in a generally rising environment because the guy who has to buy your hot dogs doesn't have any effing money.
Well, okay, but that doesn't seem to have happened yet.
Well, guess what? We
we're there. We're there.
We are now in a generally rising rate environment.
Well, combine what you just said to what Larissa said 2 weeks ago and what Jamie Dimon
said today. Why do you think houses are not moving?
Okay. But the other stuff. I understand a part of the house. We had Nancy on yesterday talking. But the other stuff. Jamie Dimon came out to say the consumer is strong.
Sure. Okay, but now he smells strong.
Okay, what you just said makes the ultimate sense in the world, and I'm going to tell you how. Because Larissa came out 2 weeks ago and said she's spending more than last year.
Right.
So if you're some dodo and says the consumer is strong, she says she's had to cut back. Because of course she's spending as much as the year before. Everything costs more. Duh.
And right.
But now what you're talking about, and even, you know, sometimes you can be even more clairvoyant than you think you are. The problem is the thing she cut out might be hot dogs. That's
right.
A problem. That's a problem for you and me if we own the hot dogs. If the thing, because all of a sudden her rent is up and her insurance is up and one of the kids had 4 stitches, and that cost her $3,000. Guess what? We might be shit out of luck. She's not coming to buy a hot dog.
Now you don't sell any hot dogs.
Yeah, that's a problem. Right. But it doesn't seem to bother the medical people.
It will.
It maybe, but what when it finally hurts them? What are you and I going to look like?
The whole reason that it doesn't bother medical people right now is because if I've got no money, I'm on Medicaid. Especially if I'm in an expansion state like Michigan or Illinois, and if I do have some money, but I'm 65, I'm on Medicare. Oh, by the way, we're going to ratchet that on you because of the IRMA. So God help you if you actually make anything and you actually have, you have income. If not, guess what? You get to pay the poor guy's bill.
I'm going to say something to you, and I wish you'd come with me on just a little bit, because I come with you a lot, by the way. I see an awful lot of people here, and for whatever reason, I try and keep my fingers somewhere and where people don't have a lot of money. And I will say this, Carl, and you can believe me or not, what I see in the people who are that don't have the best insurance policies and aren't on Medicare, I see them going without care. More than you and I paying for it, they're just not going. Because the places, it's harder and harder to get into them. There's less and less. I think that what's happening is, despite how much more we're spending,
you're not getting anything.
The fact is, I'll say there's 20% more people than 5 years ago that just don't go and hope they survive.
Well, and
there's people, people not getting their mammograms. There's people not, and in the end, it probably costs us way more because now they got cancer.
Don't take that bet, because the doctor is going to tell you to stuff yourself full of statins and all kinds of other garbage instead of solving the problem, which involves not eating the seed oils and the fast carbs.
We can do that, but I'm saying my point is people are just not going to see anybody. Unless you're a veteran or unless you somewhere.
Chief, I understand that, okay? And then you have the people that are insane enough to say, well, we just need to stop. We just need to kill the VA.
Well, we have people that, years ago, and I don't know how it was, probably wasn't
Carl,
done properly.
No. We are not going to do that.
No.
I know we're not going to do that. I'm saying there's people out there.
I got a VA hospital that is awesome just down the road, man, and I love it. They do a great job.
Hey, by the way, before we... I'm going to lob a number at you guys.
We don't want to put that out there in the ether, man.
All right, we're going to have the CPI in 25 minutes here, okay? So we're going to do that.
Hell.
But did you guys check the...
I know. I'm just saying, I don't want to speak it into existence.
Did you see the latest, the May numbers for the FINRA's margin debt?
I haven't seen the margin debt.
Well, why do I already know what they are without having to look?
Well, from March, but the M2 hasn't been updated.
Well, it just got updated to May, which is crazy. But I'm sure somewhere you probably find it more current. But from March to April, we've been talking off and on that it went up $84 billion. Well, from April to May, it's up $111 billion. That's a number.
That's a number.
Oh, wow.
Well, by the way, you do realize I don't know if you caught this one. But if anyone that bought the SpaceX, anyone that bought that in the aftermarket is now underwater.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's trading within a few bucks of
it's
the
trading 139, and it came out at 135?
Yeah, the correlation.
Well, 135 was the offer price, but it opened at like 150.
Yeah.
Right. So if you bought it in the aftermarket, you're sucking water at this point. And it's a few dollars away from, if you got an allocation, you got screwed if you didn't sell it.
Yeah,
the correlation between the S&P 500 and FINRA margin is probably as close to one as you can get. I mean,
that's got a rather interesting correlation number, doesn't it, Hal?
Yeah, it's. I should download the data and just check it, because I would suspect it's probably like almost one.
Well,
places.
Well, you know what the fun part of that is? When the margin calls start, they snowball fast because you get one. You get forced liquidated, or you either do it or they do it, right?
Well, but
that makes the prices go down, and then the next guy gets one.
All right, but you know how the math on that works. You guys do, but let's explain it to you. When the way the margin works, and this is post 1929,
right?
You have to put up 50%. Before that, the brokerage firms could they would compete. That guy wants 15, I only want 10. We can't do that anymore. So everybody's at 50%. Which, by the way, I think if our Fed chair actually gave a shit about the inflation and stuff that he's been doing nothing but talk about, he should raise the initial margin to 60. He should cut the money supply growth to zero for about the next 3 years. And, you know, Carl would say maybe go down, but I'd say cut it to zero for the next 3 years. And, oh, by the way, bring back at least a 10% reserve requirement. He's not going to do any one of those things. So, right. So it's
well,
all just talk.
I can't wait to start my research on the I'm going to look at disaggregated loans. Hopefully I can get it by state. Or I'm going to look at NAICS industry codes for certain firms.
Right.
And just see what happened pre and post the banking rule changes of March 2020.
I mean, you're talking about Dodd-Frank or before that?
I mean, when they changed the banking rules in March 2020.
Whoa, whoa. March 2020 was after Dodd-Frank. What was the 2020 change?
No. March 2020 was when they got rid of the reserve requirement.
Okay, so you're not talking about Dodd-Frank.
All reserves became excess reserves. They got rid of the reserve requirement, and that's when they changed the capital requirement and the liquidity requirements, where that creates this really weird incentive where these big banks only want to make loans to the most safest.
Okay. You know that's my favorite topic. I'm going to go there. Let me finish the margin thing for a second. Yeah. If somebody buys, if a bunch of people come into PTI today and they all buy IBM because it's down $65. Okay, it was trading 200, 300. Now it's 225. So you want to buy 1,000 shares. You've got to send us, RBC or IB, whichever clearing firm you decide to go through, you got to send us half of that, all right? So back before the crash of 29 and still in the futures side of the business, if the market goes, if IBM goes down a little more, you have a spread down to 30% where I don't have to call you up or, you know, call people up. You don't get a margin call until it gets down to 30%. Where on the future side, before 1929, it was a dollar-for-dollar thing every day. But the fly in the ointment is, once it gets down to 30%, then it is every day. Because if I say, hey, you got to send me 10 grand to get you back to the 30%, and IBM goes down the next day, the 30% now becomes a hard number. There's no more. So that's why what Carl is talking about, this is the actual how it works, is once you start going down and those calls become more rapid, it's because everybody's now up against essentially a number that if it's down a dollar the next day, you got to send me a dollar. Yeah. There's no more slide there.
Right. There's no more buffer.
There's no more buffer, and so that's a problem. So
unfortunately, the Fed's goal, it seems like, is to make sure that the stock market rises ever more.
Without a doubt. Well, that's the Fed goal. It's the people who run this country.
It's the president's goal too.
Yeah. If you look at leverage used in real estate, man, these big money investors that do bridge loans, whatnot, all kinds of things, they can borrow with just 1% down.
Yeah,
and they have even better returns when you're that leveraged. If an asset goes up, if a real estate property goes up 10% a year, and you're leveraged, you know, with only 1% cash, you can make a 500% return.
Hell, if the three of us found a house for 200 grand, Nancy was just going through this yesterday, that was a dilapidated piece of crap in a real nice neighborhood in a big lot, and we walk into a bank and say,
that's the one that you want.
What I'm saying, but we can't, if we put down the 200,000 and paid for it cash and said, by the way, lend us 200 grand, and when we're done, the thing's going to be worth six. They're going to tell us to get our moldy asses out of the office. They want no part of us unless we want to sign over our houses, or sign over our wives, our kids, and have our fathers sign it. Where I'll give you that loan in a minute on IBM here. I guess what I'm saying, Hal, is you don't know how right you are.
Well, the banking rule changes in 2020 are just, you know, I told the audience, you know, maybe a month or two ago or maybe even earlier that I didn't realize how perverse those incentives were until I started talking about it. In a macro course, I took over for a colleague who was on family leave last fall, and we just got into it. Students kept asking me questions about it, and man, when I dug into it, it's just nuts how perverse those incentives are, and it just explains why it's really being funneled into things like margin debt.
Yeah,
and why that's driving the stock market. You know,
well, but you also have When's the last time you well, who knows what Biden talked about, but when's the last time you talked about a president even talking about the person that makes $100 a week that used to be able to live on 80, now is having to live on 110? Nobody cares about that guy. The wealth in the country is all in the stock market and the houses, and in baseball and football teams. That's where the wealth is. I mean, I'm going to say a lot of my clients, if you cut their pay by 20%, they wouldn't like it, because a lot of people are retired, but they wouldn't like it, but cut their stock portfolios by 20%, and oh God, that's where the wealth is. Nobody. For matter of fact, I was looking at Lindsey Graham, you know, and it was never, you know, I don't mind a guy who thinks.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of his at all.
But I was not, you know. But still, I have no problem with somebody who
pro-war.
I don't like that part. But my point is, I don't mind a guy who thinks that way and is willing to maybe listen. From what I heard, he was willing to listen. So I guess that part's okay. But the point is, I saw him. What was his wealth? Now, I don't know if he was feeding a stepson or whatever. I haven't seen anything like that.
Well, supposedly not all that much.
That's what I'm saying. It seemed like he had like $1.5 million, which basically was his Senate salary for however many friggin' years, that he saved 10% of it. I mean, and had it
he looked like a fairly ordinary guy from a money point of view.
Right, that's exactly what I'm talking about. So, I mean, so he wasn't...
Well, I've heard that Lindsey was a really nice guy.
I mean,
everybody that talks to him, talks about him, says he's just the nicest guy.
Well, he may be the nicest guy, but he was personally responsible for enough deaths that I'm roasting.
I'm with you. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, a lot of this stuff, when people are, the wealth bubble, they can talk all they want about the Fed's actually, when you look at what happened to, Powell. When he came into office, he started moving the money supply back down, and the market, when it went into a fit, Trump called him to the White House. When he came out, this is Trump's first term. He came out and he basically said, "No, this is my new job, is to maintain the bubble." Nobody's going to walk in and say, "Well, how many votes do you get if you walk in and say, well, gee, this market's too high?" Duh.
Well, all I know is when the Fed is easy, and somebody's running against a president that has a Fed that's easy, they talk about how, you know, the Fed is juicing it, inflating it. But as soon as they become the president, they definitely don't want the Fed to stop. You know, that seems like every president does that.
Yeah, I mean it's a zero sum game. It's like as much as you don't want to give the Bears any money, you don't want to be the mayor to have when the Bears leave either. I mean, it's one of those crazy things. I mean,
just imagine what New York or California do if they had their own central bank. Holy smokes, they would have hyperinflation, sir. I'm sure of it. Yeah,
everybody would. I mean, it's so.
The reason why we don't have that hyperinflation like in Germany is because they do have this thing called interest on reserves, and you know, if money's coming out of the banking system too quickly, they can just raise it, and that will encourage banks to keep the money in reserve. So I think they think they are able to effectively throttle it. But when they do throttle like they are with interest on reserves, the money leaks out and it goes to these people that are buying these leveraged assets, you know, like for example margin debt and real estate. So it's leaking out, and that's inflating these home prices and stock market prices. It was inflating the Bitcoin, but I think there's something weird going on with Bitcoin.
I think there is too. There's something. Must be some kind of rumors of some issue.
People are taking profits. Maybe I don't know.
Maybe
they're taking money out of the Bitcoin and they're putting it into the stock market. Maybe they're just moving it.
That could be. I mean, whatever it is, it doesn't look like it's the only big bump up we had was the other day when Trump said he loved Bitcoin. It ran up $4,000. Now it's down a little bit. Hey, where are these guys going to get this? They're predicting the CPI is down for the month. Where is that coming from?
Oh, probably gasoline. I would assume gasoline.
Gasoline did come down a little bit. Yeah,
but it's right back up this last week.
Well, but that's past the sample, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, Now, the other thing is that fuel oil...
You got to remember, the CPI is about a month old, so...
Right. Well, the other thing that I...
The number they put out today is from, like, a month ago shopping.
Right, right. Well, that's how it is with all of these things, right? Yeah. It's always that way. But the thing that I think is so interesting about this is that, and, you know, not just living here, but driving around doing this trip recently, is that while that is certainly the case... When you look at fuel oil, you look at diesel as opposed to gasoline, the decline there has been much smaller on a percentage basis. And so, you know, you still got go up into Pennsylvania, and you still got $5 diesel.
Yeah.
Okay, and you got gas over $4. And
it got below $3 here in North Carolina.
Gas over $4 here. Gas over $4 here.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, you know, down here, okay, when I left at the last weekend, when I left, I filled my tank for like $3.05. Yeah. All right. And I get into Pennsylvania and it's $4.10.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And I'm like, what in the F? You know, but I mean, it is.
Don't go to
is.
Pennsylvania, Carl.
Well, you go where what you're doing is, right? And I was chasing big boy.
Well, it's cheaper than flying.
So that's
my
what I did.
Goodness.
Well, I get that. But the thing is, the unevenness of the relief that people got. All right. Now, this area has
it comes down to taxes, Hal. I mean,
well, it's not just Chief. There's a little more to it. Yes, taxes are part of it.
Taxes and the what is it? The cities have the special blend in the summer.
Each state has like their different grades, and that increases the cost of production. So,
yeah, it's an interesting situation though, in that here we have very odd seasonal patterns, so it. Every single year in front of Memorial Day, gas goes up 20, 30 cents. Every year.
Well, right? That's because everybody's going to go fill up Memorial Day weekend.
Well, but I'm saying, so if you got a brain in your head, the week before, you make sure all your tanks are full. Okay?
Yeah.
And then as soon as the weekend's over, the price comes back down. So it is an every year phenomenon here.
Well, I think that happens, Carl, I think that happens more in rural states where people are driving more, like in a
it's also in very seriously tourist heavy places, right?
Yeah,
but over Memorial Day
where people do staycations, right?
Yeah, right.
I think, and they drive a lot. Like when I was a kid living in Lewiston, Idaho, I had to drive 80 miles to go to a rock concert, you know.
Yeah,
Idaho, you have to drive 100 miles to go to a movie.
Wait a minute, you only had to drive 80 miles in Idaho? 80 miles away was something in Idaho?
Well, I mean, I lived in Lewiston, and in order to go to a rock concert, I usually had to go to Spokane, and, that's a 100-mile drive. In Bruno, we had to drive 80 miles to go to the movies on the weekend.
Carl, well, you were just talking about gasoline. I mean, this is a, from out of the blue guy. I used to give, way back when, you know, we had the Arab oil embargo, and everybody was so concerned about gasoline. We had a lecture someplace where the guy was from the Petroleum Institute, and it was pretty interesting. I mean, it's so obvious, everybody should know the answer. But what's the biggest inventory of gasoline in a country?
In your car.
It's in everybody's tank.
I would assume.
Yeah, and so there was
just
something
from the
like...
the number of vehicles.
Yeah, it was
right.
something like... I don't know, at the time there were like 200 and some million cars in the country.
Yeah, there's 15 gallons or 20 gallons in every one of them.
Well, so. Unless you got a Suburban, then it's more. But
But
he goes, every car, if you average it all out, it's about a half a tank everybody has. I mean, some people are full, some people are empty. Yeah. It's about a half a tank. He goes, but if you were to say the prices might be going up next week and everybody runs up and fills up, he goes, I guarantee you, prices are going up next week because the system, there's no way that the system could put 5 gallons, not even fill up, could put 5 extra gallons in everybody's car countrywide in a space of a week and not have the thing be like empty. he goes, you could play with this if you want. So the idea of...
Well, that's why gasoline prices go up so much in the South when there's a hurricane coming, because everybody... fills up their tank and all those.
Well,
red,
plus the guys are going to gouge too. But tanks. So you lob a little gouging on top of that. But the whole point is and then all of a sudden you say, well, they come back down. Well, now all of a sudden nobody shows up at the gas station for 3 weeks because everybody's full. I mean,
well, you know, the funny thing is about the about you know what you said about gouging when the hurricane's coming. My a colleague of mine at work, he told me that during a hurricane, his neighbor owns a gas station, and he has a button on his desk where he can add 5 cents to the price, and he does it until gasoline traffic demand is back to normal. So what he does is he bumps it up 5 cents every 5 minutes that traffic remains heavy.
Now, if he actually had to get up the ladder and change it, he probably wouldn't do it so fast.
Yeah, but the button, though, because he doesn't want to run out of gas, because if he runs out of gas, he loses sales on the high margin.
I'm sure in his mind he's raising the price for your benefit.
Well, no, but he's raising the price because he doesn't want to run out of gasoline and lose out on.
He doesn't want to run out. I love this. He doesn't want to run out at $3 when he can run out at $4.
Well, no, Tom. What it is he doesn't make any money off the gas, and he makes money off the concessions.
I'm going to say that
that's what he makes money off. And if he doesn't have gas, nobody's going to come into the store to buy soda.
He probably doesn't make a lot at the quote competitive level, but if all of a sudden he bought the gas last week, instead of getting 310, he can nudge it to 330. I guarantee he's making money on the gas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He is. But his objective is to make sure that he has gasoline in the tank.
Right.
Right.
Because if people see that the yellow bags over the handles, they're not going to stop and buy the goodies. Right. And those goodies are where the margins are.
Well, and yeah, and the big problem when prices go down is that he's got a tank that he paid a higher price for.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why it's sticky going down. Yeah.
Right, and the guy across the street just bought
the brand new fuel for a lot lower.
So you're saying if a guy like Carl comes in with his 35-foot Scarab cigarette boat and says, I'll buy 500 gallons for $5, he's going to say no?
I don't know.
Just charge him a higher price.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Because he doesn't want to run out of gas.
Oh, by the way, you want to know what one of the newest scams is that's been uncovered among all of the wonderful Indian immigrants that own a lot of those local gas stations? This just showed up. This has now been proved. These guys come in here and they get SNAP. They go into Costco, where they'll take SNAP and buy Doritos, you know, the bulk packages of candy bars. I mean, that's what Costco is, right? It's a warehouse club, right?
Actually, you get the wrong place, but go ahead.
Or Sam's Club.
Sam's is designed for that. Costco isn't.
They pay the sales tax.
Chief, we bought a crap ton of stuff at Sam's. We had to pay sales tax, but it was cheaper to get paper there than it was to call up Quill, okay?
So I'm saying is way back in the day.
I'm just saying, I mean, yeah. It's a perfectly legitimate business place to buy things.
Carl, there's been food stamps going back forever.
I'm trying to be precise here.
No.
They are not the same. Sam's at one point, that was like 80% of their business was small businesses. Costco was never like that.
I get that, okay? The point is they're paying for it with public benefits. They're eating it. They then take it back to their gas station and sell it at 100% markup. And guess what? Their cost of goods sold is zero.
Well, I never saw anybody doing that at the Sam's Club, but I've been around.
And guess what? That's now the newest thing that's going around with these guys that we think are such a great contribution to America.
Something was going on in New York with that too, where people, the bodegas, were running a scam. They were using a food stamp scam to sell the groceries in their home countries or something.
Right. There's all kinds of...
It was like six years ago, maybe.
But this kind of stuff is now going on here. So essentially, what's the bottom line is that you are subsidizing the local gas station guy who is... You bought the food in his place that he's selling.
I'm not absolving that, but I'd rather grab one guy out of Washington. It's more than all these guys combined.
Yeah. Well, how about why does everyone howl about this? How about Snap can only buy unprocessed,
exactly,
actual, yeah, food?
Real food.
Raw hamburger. Real food.
Well, yeah.
Apples. Okay.
It used to be like that. And, oh, by the way, you couldn't get toilet paper. I don't know if that was a good idea.
Well, Carl. Carl, did you see the interview, the testimony where Brandon Gill from Texas asked this woman whose job it is to, who's an expert in Snap? He asked her to define explain.
Yeah.
Why Coca-Cola
had to be,
Snap.
Yeah, was necessary. That they would starve if they didn't have their Coca-Cola. Yeah,
I look at that and I see how much the Secret Service has paid in room fees to Trump's places this year, and it's in the how many tens of millions of dollars. Where do you start?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, Chief, but I'll tell you what. If I look up the amount of money that the USDA puts out on SNAP every year, that's a pretty big number.
How much
of that has been stolen? Why does anybody
necessarily? I guess I want people to eat healthy, and I don't want people doing crazy stuff on SNAP. I mean, I don't want anybody stealing anything, but the idea that people actually spend their time saying that somebody's on SNAP shouldn't be able to have a Coke. I mean, I guess as long as it's not booze, I'm not necessarily worried about it. I mean, I had a buddy who's kind of a character.
Tom, let me tell you, Tom, when I was a freshman in high school, my mom was on food stamps, and it was when the money was, when food stamps were purple and it was embarrassing to use.
Get toilet paper in those days.
Yeah. She'd tell me, Hal, go buy the groceries. And what I would do, because I was embarrassed to use the money, is I would wait out underneath a tree and count the number of people going in and out of the store. And I'm like, I'm going to go in now because there's nobody in there. I go in there real quick. I get some stuff. I get myself like a cookie or something, or a soda. I think I could have bought it with that. I don't remember. But I bought the groceries. Now, the interesting thing is when I was watching people going in and out of the store, I observed a black market on the side of the store where a guy that wanted to buy alcohol,
yeah,
he couldn't buy it with the food stamps. He was trading his food stamp money on an exchange rate of 2-for-1.
Yeah, like a 50% discount.
Well,
yeah.
That happened all the time. So if a person's on food stamps and they want to get a Coke with food stamps, all they got to do is exchange it.
Well, I mean, you could just be the barter system. Here's my 5 pounds of hamburger. Give me a 6-pack of beer. I mean,
explain.
Hey,
we'll ever stop that.
All right, guys, we got to zero in on the CPI is coming out in like a minute here. So let's.
We just got it, and the market loves it. But their site's being slow. What is it? Decreased 0.4.
Yeah. Does anybody believe that? How could you possibly believe that?
I don't believe it because I just spent $60 at McDonald's for a family of six.
Well, index for energy down 5.7. There's the whole deal right there.
Yeah.
What's the? I've got the unadjusted minus 0.3.
Well,
the adjusted minus 0.4.
Okay, food's up 0.2. Duh. Index for food at home and away from home. Less food and energy, unch.
Yeah, which I don't believe that.
Which I don't believe either, but let me look at the inside. But
with the PPI numbers as high as they've been the last 3 months, how could it possibly be zero?
It's not. They lie. But you know what? The market loves it.
They got energy down 10%? I don't buy that.
You know what? The Nasdaq's up 400 points. Shut up.
Yeah, well, as long as we're up, we're fine.
The Nasdaq's up 400 points. Shut up.
Yep. It's good. Whatever it is, it's good for me. And actually, it is good. It's good for my clients. So actually, it's fine.
It's not fine when you have to actually write checks. But that'll never happen.
Well, we got the interest rates. Why don't we just say it was down 20%? Why, if we're gonna lie, let's just lie. Why screw around with it?
Well,
it's kind of hard to believe the government when I spent $60 for a family of 60 to McDonald's on Sunday.
Well, okay, meat, poultry, eggs up 0.5% on the month, okay, unadjusted, all right? So, here we are with some real numbers. By the way, dairy up 1.2. These are our monthly percentages. So, you know,
medical care commodities are down. You really believe that?
No, I obviously don't believe that. Not
electricity down.
Down.
Electricity down 1%. And Amy, anybody's electric bill is down.
Well, now wait a minute. Electricals? No,
mine isn't going up.
No, chief, you got to look inside the report. Energy services on the month May 26th to June 26th plus 1.5.
What line are you looking at?
I'm table one. Down the report a little while. Energy commodities.
Energy service.
Electricity plus 1.5 on the month.
Right, you see what you did to me?
Now, by the way, that's unadjusted.
Yeah, and what's
seasonal? Get away from that lying crap of garbage knob diddling junk.
Okay.
Because the knob diddling junk says negative one.
No,
for electricity.
All right, so okay, here's what we're not arguing. We're just I ask this question every month. Normally, this doesn't come out on the day you guys are here, but who? Energy services and electricity. Okay, they're both up. They're both up 1.5% on the month. The adjusted number for energy services is minus 0.7.
Right.
And the adjusted number for electricity is minus one. So, I'm very curious on this, and I don't think either of you guys is as bright as you are. Someplace, somewhere, somebody pays a guy like Ricky to go out and say, "Get me the numbers on electricity." And here's where you got to go to get them. So Ricky goes out and he spends his time and he grinds away and he works his 8 hours a day
and he gets them.
He comes back and he says, "Looks to me like it's up 1.5%." Now I don't think that Trump changed the line. Somewhere between Ricky and Trump, somebody did. Who's the guy? And why would somebody say, that's not right? It's 1.5. But all the work Ricky just did. And the reason why I go from this base is our friend Mike Murphy, who does our soccer stuff, his mom used to work for the BLS in Cleveland. Yeah. I think it was a part-time job, and she went out and, I don't know what she was, let's say she was getting rice and macaroni. I knew Mike's mom, as honest as the day is long, I'm sure she submitted a report and said, "It looks to me like rice and macaroni are up 0.2%. That's not right.
That's not what got the knob-twisting.
Let's make it down 0.4. Okay, somebody somewhere did this. Now, my question is, how far up the chain? I don't think her boss would stick her fingers in the air like the guy in Casablanca and the wind is blowing. I'm going to make this lower. Someplace, somewhere, there has to be some sort of a...
Chief, I am astonished. I tell you, astonished to find that there's gambling going on in this
room. Yeah, I mean, I guess where along the chain is it, and why pick that line? Why not take non-alcoholic beverages and make that my? Well, actually, that's down 1.5% too. I don't know how that could be. But
well, Tom, you know, the month-to-month ones in June, they make sense given that May was so high. But if you look at the 12-month. The 12-month shows a completely different picture.
Well, yeah, it does.
Because 12 months ago, the base, the price in the base measurement was a lot lower than the base measurement in May. So that's why you had a negatives month-to-month in June, but you had these massive positives in the year-over-the-year. So it's just that May was really, really high relative to June of last year. So you have these huge, massive percent changes year to year, but you have a declines month to month.
Well, the one line that
I—that's the problem with the percent change. You gotta know what the base year is or the base.
The one line here that I mean, everybody, you guys know about a line or two that I don't. The one I actually, for whatever stupid reason, I enjoy looking at the prices of old trucks, and whenever anybody wants one, I try and find them one. Everybody has a dumb hobby, and it's better than, I guess, something bad, right? I'm going to say these guys have used cars and trucks down 1.8% for the year. For this month, they got them up 1.6. After the adjustment, they got it down 0.2.
Yeah.
Okay, now, I will tell you this. If you're looking for used trucks, whoever this guy is an absolute moron. Because not only can you not, but then again, there's a, it would be very hard to do. Like, for instance, when I bought my truck, so let's say it was 20 years old, and it had certain amount of miles on it, and it cost X. Well, if you go back and look now at a 20-year-old truck with the same amount of miles on it, A, you can't find it. But right. If you found one with the same amount of miles on it, it would be $5,000, $8,000 more than I paid for mine. It would be 50% more. What you can find is one that has twice the miles on it for the same price as I paid for mine. So it's very qualitative. But I will say this, or subjective, I guess. I will say this. That line is bullshit. Anybody who thinks can afford a new car. Anybody who thinks that the price of used cars is going down is out of his friggin' mind.
I mean, what's going on, Tom, is that because other things cost so much, people who were going to be in the market to buy a used car or a new car are maybe holding on to their current car longer than they would have otherwise.
You look at somebody's...
So they're doing some substitution.
Hell, you look at the trucks that are 15, 20 years old, they still want $10,000 for them. 250,000 miles, 270. I'm going, well, first
that's
of all,
that's because of inflation, man. Inflation,
that's what I'm saying. So
pushes everything up.
Now, if you
not price increases, the amount of money that the Fed has printed over the last 20 years, that's what's pushing these prices up.
But anybody who thinks that the price of new cars, if a new truck is $80,000, anybody who thinks the price of used cars is going down, how? Where do we have that guy? I want to sell him a bridge.
Well, all I'm saying is maybe people are putting off making the change, and they're just keeping their jalopy longer than they would have.
Well, yeah, but that all comes out in the wash, right? Yeah. It shows up in repair. Try and get something fixed. Try and get in to get something fixed.
Well, maybe people are going on YouTube and figuring out how to fix it themselves, too.
Oh, you can't. Try one of these new ones.
No, a 20-year-old vehicle, you can still fix.
You can still mess with that, but... Yeah, a little bit. Now, Carl could.
I'm not going to buy a new car because I can't. I don't have the tool. They won't give you the tools. They keep the computer data. They keep the tools. They want you to go to the dealership to get the car repaired.
If you go to get an alignment and you got a new car, the guy can align it, but he can't reset the sensors.
Yeah,
but it's insane.
Well, here's the key for the alignment. Don't hit a curb.
Well, how do you not hit potholes? Well, how do you do that here? You can do that in wherever you are. You can't do that here.
You can't do that in Chicago, New York.
One of my buddies got I was going to say a new BMW.
In New York, you need a 4x4 because the potholes are so big.
One of my buddies lost 3 tires the last year in a Stevenson in a BMW.
Oh, you know, when I was living in Boston back in 2003, I had a summer internship there in my PhD program, and I was driving out by Worcester. Is it Worcester, Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm driving out there. I'm going over this bridge over this river.
I think they would pronounce it Worcester, but go ahead.
Yeah. I'm driving over the bridge, and I'm in the center lane. I'm not in the second to the right lane. I'm in the center lane, the middle lane, going out toward Worcester. And I look up there, and a car is stopped on the bridge. And this bridge is like the George Washington Bridge. It's just massive. And as I drive past him, he's in one lane to my right. There's a pothole where you can see the river below, and his tire hit that freaking hole in the bridge.
No.
And his rim was off his freaking car.
Well,
that's a serious alignment.
My buddy with the BMW, you couldn't just take it into Firestone. You had to take it to BMW because you had to get a new wheel, a new tire. I don't know how much it cost him. And you had to reset God knows what. You had to redo the alignment and reset the whole thing.
You have to buy 4 new tires. If you have to replace one, you got to get 4 new tires on those cars.
Well, it depends on how new it is, but...
Yeah.
I think we'd find a way to only buy one, but you got to buy at least the same brand. But even... You know, but this whole point, I mean, who's lying to who? I mean, we're talking about a society that has... And hell, you're more on this than anybody else. In the last 5 years, we've had a 45% bulge in prices. That's what the money supply has been. That's what the bulge has been. And
the way the government does it, they put the onus on the corporations and the firms when it's really on the central bank and themselves.
Did you see the India came out with this big thing? Inflation's up to 4.6%.
In India.
Okay, so I immediately, like the knucklehead I am and like you are, Al, unfortunately, I immediately go to the Indian money supply. The last year it's up like 13%, and I'm going, I don't buy this 4%.
Somebody's lying.
Either it hasn't worked its way through yet, and the money supply is up that much in the last few months, but you're not even close, right?
Yeah, nah.
Well, so how?
I said, you don't want to look at prices. You want to look at the M2. You got to look at the money supply growth rate, and then smooth it over time.
But how do we?
That's how you understand what inflation.
Well, I have the Bodius here. What is? Everybody comes at this in a different direction, and we all kind of reach the same conclusion that a certain percentage of the population. I mean, Larissa does it from the ground up. I'm spending more money than I did last year, but I'm not doing stuff because I had to cut some stuff out. So yeah. If you're a buffoon on TV and say the consumer is still spending, of course I'm spending because everything costs more than last year. It doesn't mean I'm getting the same benefit. But if you look at the full numbers, she goes, I'm actually probably paying a little more. And even though I'm cutting back, something's dribbling on my credit card, which I don't want. But it is dribbling there a little bit. So if you're from Washington and you're one of these glasses half full people, you're going to say, I'm doing great. But in fact, I'm not. And by the way, Carol and I were talking earlier. She said they've cut out Sunday breakfast with the kids. She said, I don't need the $60 for three people. And now if the three of us own the restaurant, we're feeling it. Or if we owned a hot dog stand and we cut out hot dogs on Friday night, we're feeling it. But this is kind of percolating through to some degree. Now, if you're in a place where you can raise prices, if you're a Major League Baseball team and you raise them and somehow or another somebody keeps buying them and maybe they're deducting them or whatever they're doing, but whatever it is, there's pockets of this, which is what Milton Friedman used to warn about all the time. He goes, it's never even. That's why you can't let it happen.
Right. And it's definitely not even now with the way the banking rules have skewed the incentives.
Expand on that because I cut us off and then the CPI came out. It is... How are we going to explain on this show so everybody can understand exactly what you're talking about? Because it seems fairly clear to me, but still, you're into it more than me. Carl, maybe... how are we going to explain to people what this means?
Tom, there's an episode in the TV show Raising Hope where Bert and his wife, they create a barter scheme, and they quickly realize that when there's 14... When there's a 14 good economy, there's like 90 prices, and so they decide to print money, and they call them Burt Bucks, and then they create a hyperinflation. So that's a good place to start. It's probably the funniest thing I've ever seen from Hollywood when it comes to money printing. It's so freaking good.
I don't know if you've read this or not, but somewhere back in the day, somebody wrote the original treatise on money supply and what happens when there's an increase in money supply. And it was done in a prisoner of war camp.
Yep.
And yeah. It had to do where cigarettes became the modicum of exchange. But yep. And the point was, whatever it is your exchange, your dollar, whatever it is, your wampum, there has to be some value to it. Or else it's useless. But at least everybody in those days liked to smoke. They were addicted by people. So there was a value to the cigarette. So then it just became a question of how many cigarettes was a half pint worth? You know, basically how many cigarettes was a new pair of underwear worth? So everything was related to cigarettes, like it is to dollars or whatever it is now. And all of a sudden, one day the place gets rescued. The first thing the GIs did was dump like four cases of cigarettes into the POW camp, and what that did to the pricing. Wait a minute, you're not getting my half pint for four cigarettes now that everybody's got 20 cigarettes. It ain't working.
Well, you know, people could take care of that inflation by smoking cigarettes. They could do like Johnny. Yeah.
Well, you
Johnny
could,
in Breakfast Club, smoke up, Johnny.
Well, you could do in like Weimar Germany, you'd burn the dollars or burn the stuff, but I mean, it's kind of
Well, you know, you get a lot of enjoyment out of a cigarette, apparently.
Well, what I'm saying is, all of a sudden, you dump some in there, all the prices went askew, and now we don't seem to be able to understand that when it's so simple, it's scary.
People need to read about the gold and silver that was harvested out of the Americas when Spain conquered Latin America and South America when they conquered.
Did they harvest it, or they just steal the Indians' gold?
They just took all this gold and they dumped it into Europe, and Spain had a freaking hyperinflation because it was like basically turning on a printing press. They thought, man, we're gonna have all this gold. They dumped it in Spain and it spread throughout Europe, and they had this hyperinflation because it was just like Weimar Republic printing money.
So why do we have a Federal Reserve that doesn't believe it?
Well, I think they believe it. It's just economists in macro have been able to change the definition of inflation to the percent change in what they call the price level. That the percent change in the price level is a symptom of the inflation. And what that does is it puts the blame on the evil corporations instead of the central bank. So they've changed the definition, right? So now when we think of inflation, we think percent change in prices, but inflation is the excessive growth in the money supply.
By the way, we didn't go to break, but S&P futures are up 19. NASDAQ futures are up 320. Like Carl said, they like the number. We got gold rallying. We had interest rates down 10 years back. Not below 4.5, but 4.57. It was higher. It was pushing 4.6. So we got those down a little bit because of these numbers that came up. So I guess that's our break. We also have what's a soccer game today, Ricky? It's somebody's today.
Spain-France, man.
Spain-France. Who do you like?
I like Spain. I'm tired of the French.
people have been saying that for centuries.
We have great surplus French rifles, never fired, only dropped once.
Remember that guy from France that played for the Lakers?
Oh, yeah. What was
his
name?
He just reminded me of a guy that never took a shower. Gasalt or Gasson or something like that.
One of my buddies.
The 7-foot Frenchman. His brother played for Toronto.
Oh, Paul Gasol.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the brother's name. One guy played for the Bulls for a while.
He hadn't showered in a month. That just, you know.
One of my buddies went and played over in Europe, and he said the first thing he noticed is everybody's pretty gamey on the court. He goes, "What's with these guys?" He goes, "I know you take a shower after a game,
well,
but these guys will take one for a week."
It might have something to do with the fact that only 20% of buildings in Europe have air conditioning.
When I was in, we stayed in Vienna. Now it was cooler, but it can get hot. I had a hotel room.
Well, has pretty high elevation, so I can imagine it being pretty mild.
Well, but it was the hotel room, and this is a pretty nice place. No air conditioning. It's huge windows, but there were no screens. So, I mean, you wake up.
Oh, damn.
But, you know, it wasn't like there was mosquito heaven, but there were a few guys flying around in there. And the tub was a big tub, but it had a shower, but there was no, like, shower curtain. So if you weren't careful, you had a flood in the place. You know, I'm in there taking, like, a regular shower. I'm not going to not shower. This thing was messed up. I mean, I was being careful, but I was spraying all over the damn place. I mean, what is this story? Anyway, it's a different world, but yeah, there was no. Why don't they have screens? What's with the screens are not that highly developed. What's that all about?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why that would be. Maybe it has something to do with the cost of living or something.
Well, one of the
margins really squeezed.
Yeah, it's not really food for the show. But my buddy John McPhee, who came on the show a couple times, he used to work for the Fed. Just goes to show well, people are economists. He had 90 bazillion miles, right? Because he all used to fly for the Fed all over the world. So he decides he's going to fly around he had a conference in Britain, a conference in, I don't know, somewhere further south. So then he had to go to a conference in Tokyo. So instead of coming this way, he went the other way to fly around the world to say he did it. Well, first thing, he gets on a plane in somewhere in the Middle East. He goes, God, I get on this thing and it's a little gamey. And I go, all right, tell me the truth. For how long did it smell? And he goes, you know, not more than about 20 or 30 minutes. Then it just, it's the old adage, if everybody smells, does anybody smell?
Yeah. Well, your nose adjusts.
So then this is what was scary for a Fed economist. He says to me, you know, I flew around the world and I only got like 15,000 miles. I go, John, you didn't fly around the equator. He goes, why should that make a difference? I goes, because he didn't go 25,000 miles. Here's a
He's going with a polar.
Here's a guy making policy, and I'm going, oh my God. I said, if you went around the world to the North Pole, you went 5 feet. It makes a big difference. What are you doing? But anyway, he made it around the world. But everybody stunk. So there. And now we got off on that topic. But what is the next step? The Fed now with today's numbers, who knows? They're not going to raise rates. They're going to stay steady. They might even lower. I mean, does anybody believe? I believe that they're never going to address the bulge. The bulge through COVID, they're never going to address that 40%. It's a question of what do we do going forward and how people are going to adjust. And my feeling is, and who was saying yesterday, it wasn't me, it was, who was on earlier? Whatever was talking, Mr. John Flanagan said he thinks to a certain extent people have adjusted to the everyday stuff. As Larissa said, I don't do breakfast anymore. Somebody else is not doing that. So people have adjusted to the stuff they see on a daily basis. This is my opinion from what I've heard from the people on the show. But I really do believe that nobody can adjust to the thing you haven't seen yet. Nobody can adjust to the 4,500-hour transmission when it used to be 1,500. Nobody can adjust to the 90,000-hour roof if you're retired, for God's sake. Nobody. It used to be $4,000. I'm not saying it's, used to be way less than that. Nobody can adjust to the thing you haven't seen yet. You have no idea that the air conditioner has doubled. And I don't know how you deal with that other than hope it doesn't happen to you.
I just fix it myself.
Well, okay, good luck with that. If you got
I'm flying to Utah. I'm flying to Utah Friday because my property manager got an estimate for the condo that we rent out. Our tenant moved out after 3 years and needs a lot of work. They got an estimate for $15,000.
Yeah, that's cheap.
Yeah.
And I'm going to fly there and I'm going to do it for about $500. I guarantee I can do it for $500.
Well, no, you're not. Not if you're paying $8 a gallon for paint.
I'm going to pay $500 for the airline ticket. I've already done that. And I'm going to get the materials for about $500.
Oh, good luck.
They were putting down $500 to repair a couple of drywall holes from the doorknob.
I get that, but
no freaking way it's
that
much.
Audrey's got guys at her place. I got her the best guys, right? She's doing all the eaves, and they're pretty complicated eaves. They're all wood. Well, these guys are not going to paint over crappy paint. So with the sandpaper and the wood putty and everything, I mean, they're doing the job right. I'm going to guess at the end of the day, the sandpaper is going to be $450.
Hmm.
I mean, you can't get away from that. I mean, paint is $80. When I used to be
I'll let you know how much money we spend on getting this thing updated.
And plus, but what is your time worth? You can't say it's free. It's not.
Well, I'm going to be flying on Frontier, which means it's going to be kind of like riding a stagecoach.
Well, at least you don't have a big mustache on the side of the plane. I would have thought. Hey, I got a question for you. Only you. Believe it or not, I had the question last night. Hey, Chief, you don't know a lot of guys. Can you drink milk like right out of the cow? And I go, I think so. I think that's what held it.
Yeah, you can.
How long before you have to pasteurize it?
Well, I think with raw milk, you want to drink it immediately because the pilgrims, the only thing they had to drink was probably cow's milk. And the bad rap about raw milk is it comes from New York. When the immigrants came into New York about 100 years ago, they had cows eating like garbage. I mean, imagine a cow in New York City.
Milk was
rancid.
Right. Where the problem actually came from was they were feeding the cows the spurge from stills.
Ah. Yeah.
That's it, and yeah, you're right. The milk was rancid.
What you feed the cow is what the milk tastes like.
They had all this. They had all this extra, all the stuff that comes off the still, right? Yeah. From making booze, that's spent grain. All right, yeah. but it's garbage.
Yeah.
And they were feeding cows that, and this, of course, was, in the time when cows were in the city.
And then back
right?
then, they didn't have refrigerators, so that right. raw milk probably went bad in the house.
All right, so if somebody's going to drink raw, warm milk, you got about 8 hours or a day.
Well, if you drink the raw milk every day, I mean, if you put it in your fridge, you're fine.
All right.
For about, But I drink it so fast that I don't have to worry about it going bad.
Yeah, you really ought to drink it the same way that the cow would, the calf would.
Yeah.
Which is like right
now. That's how the pilgrims did it. They milked their cow every morning, and they left the milk on the table, and they drank the milk all day long. And it was gone by the next day. And they had to milk the cow every day, or otherwise the cow would stop giving milk.
Right.
So they milked the cow every day, and they drank the milk every day. And my grandfather used to tell me about how when he was in his 30s and 40s, they would milk cows every day, and they would make butter with it, and they would sell the butter to the store in town. And if they stopped milking the cow, it would stop. And a German friend would come over from church and come over and see all the butter on the table, and he'd go, because Mormons call each other brother, he'd go, "Brother Stott, you have some butter for me?"
Well, I mean, you could take heavy whipping cream and find somebody.
It was all raw. It was all raw. They would sell the raw buttermilk to the store. They would sell the raw extra milk to the store. And it was fine. As long as you refrigerate
it. You know, it was 109 degrees in Salt Lake City. I hope your air conditioner works in that place.
Yeah, you don't want to let it sit around. It's just like any other milk.
All right, but so not many people.
What you feed the cow matters.
All right, so I got an answer to the question next time I see this guy. So if you're getting...
Oh, by the way, in France, raw milk products are the premier products. The pasteurized products are, you know, for the, you know, the average person or less. So the premier dairy products in France are raw milk products.
Well, don't you have... I mean, obviously, if you're going to do... If they're raw, you're going to have your... The machine, your hands, all that stuff are going to have to be clean, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, yeah. They have these really interesting pumps that pull the milk. That's whether you pasteurize it or not, right?
I guess. All right, back to when Carl was talking for that, we're starting to see. I saw yesterday with the interest rates back up. Of course, they're coming. Actually, the big drop in interest rates here, the 30-year is almost even again. When is this?
Well, to me, the yield curve looks like it's steepening, right? And anchored at the federal funds rate. So maybe the federal funds rate is right where it should be. Because you have a steepened yield curve, and the 30-day, the 60-day are right around the federal funds rate, and that kind of tells me maybe the Fed's got it right.
All right, when I have both of you, we only got a couple of minutes. For some reason, I got myself turned on to this, and you know, maybe it's because I have a real problem with the administration anyway. But the idea of essentially screwing with the people that are lending us money. I'm hearing rumors that one of the reasons why gold isn't going up and other things is that and there was a YouTube thing yesterday I didn't watch, but this lady does this economic stuff, and she zeroes in on Japan. She's absolutely convinced that Japan is often, not everything, because they got almost $1 trillion we own, but is often U.S. assets kind of as fast as they have to try and defend the yen, which, let me see where that is. I'm going to say it's still probably over 160. It's down to one. It's under 162. So they must have done a little intervention yesterday. She claimed that's a big problem. If all of a sudden these guys start cutting back on how much they buy of our stuff, and oh, by the way, all we do is insult the UK, and they're like second. I mean, if that starts to happen, where exactly are we gonna finance this disaster of a deficit we have?
Yeah, well, I think the key is which nation remains the freest and whose currency is the least bad, and that's what really matters.
Well, I mean, there
are the worst currencies. What are you going to put your money in?
Well, I mean, their currency is bad because we got the price of oil up. Yeah. And now, you know, we did this to Iran when the strait was open, and now the strait's closed. So how are we doing? I'm sure somebody will tell me it's for some... You know, massive.
Well, everything's got to be put in relative terms, right? You don't look at the, you don't look at the polling data. You look at the trend in the polling data. You don't look at the number of murders by city. You look at the number of murders per 100,000 people. So you got to put things in relative terms. And what I mean by that is, the nation that's the most free, where there's the least amount of corruption, not zero corruption, not zero crime, but the least amount of crime, least amount of corruption, where property rights are, for the most part, upheld, and the freest nation, and the least destroyed currency, people are going to want that currency more than the other currencies.
Well,
so,
I read yesterday.
As long as we got that going for us, I think we're okay.
We're out of time, but I read yesterday the this John Gordon's assessment of what happened during the Civil War. I'm not going to throw it again because we're out of time, but it had to do with the Union, whoever, I don't know who was running the show because there wasn't a Fed, how they increased how much they spent because of the war, obviously, and they got something like 60% of it from taxes, 30% of it from borrowing, and they only had to finance 10 to 12% a year from printing money.
Mm.
And now it's all we're doing is printing money. We're not yeah. increasing taxes. Yeah. We are borrowing, but you know, the South
and printing money is it's a subsidy to the rich who buy the
yeah.
the assets.
But how
leveraged assets.
The Confederacy was
and
just
it's a
the
tax on everybody else.
How the Confederacy had to finance like 60 or 70% of their war by printing money, which got even worse because mm-hmm. you could counterfeit them easy enough. So,
well, the South wasn't developed economically like
right.
the North was.
Anyway, yeah. guys.
It was agricultural.
Good stuff. S&P futures up 19. NASDAQ futures up 312. Carl, talk to you on Friday. Hal, as usual, yep. hey, next week, let's go into deeper what you're doing on this because I'm dying to read the final print of this.
Well, right now I'm putting together a macro class. I'm putting together this online macro class, and it's coming out freaking beautifully, man. I got floating graphs and floating equations, and students enter things in answer boxes, and the math has done for them. I'm going to actually turn it into an ebook.
I want to put you back with a blackboard, see how you do.
Well, I teach all online, so I don't really get an opportunity to get on the blackboard.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We should see how you do, like in the old days. Give you one shot.
Oh, well, if I'm in class, to get engagement up, I use the same stuff that I do for my online classes. I have these online models.
That's cheap.
They're really slick.
I'm still real slick, but that's cheating. I want to see how you do on a blackboard. Just saying.
Well, I don't even need a blackboard. I can just go up there and field questions for an hour and a half.
I bet you can. Anyway, guys, good stuff. Thank you, Ricky. SP Futures up 15. NASDAQ is up 299 now. Let's come back a little bit. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.